Audio hosting for comics are great is provided by Kablam, KABLAM.com, the one-stop printing solution for the independent comics publisher. If you want to read some comics, check out Indie Planet Digital, where you can download thousands of comics to your favorite digital reading device, IndiePlanetDigital.com. This time on the show, comics for music lovers, comics for the recovering goth, and Alf saves Christmas. All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live Wednesdays at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, comics.aadl.org. And this is the show where we talk about making comics, writing comics, drawing comics, the lifestyle of the cartoonist, all the stuff that surrounds this medium that drives us all mad. My name is Jersey Drozd, cartoonist and teaching artist. And with me today, it's the end of the year. It's the last show of the year. And continuing our tradition, we've brought back, well, I'm grateful to be joined by the Comics Bakery team, Raina Telgemeier and Dave Roman. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jersey.
Happy holidays.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and so on. Comics Bakery, we never really play up the Comics Bakery thing, but that's like your guys' business, right?
It's become our business. At one point, it was sort of just like a name that we used for tabling at conventions. But then at a certain point, Raina and I had to incorporate and take our business seriously for tax purposes. And we spent like over a year trying to think of a better name or a new name, and we just couldn't do it, and we were just putting it off, and our accountant was getting annoyed with us, so we were just like, the Comics Bakery. And we just sort of had to make sure that our friends that we were sharing tables with were okay with that, and hopefully they are.
For those who are new to the show, it's comicsbakery.com, and that's where you can find the work of Raina Telgemeier of Smile Drama, Sisters, the Babysitters Club, which is coming out in color next year.
That's starting in April.
That's exciting. And then Dave Roman of Astronaut Academy and Starbunny.net.
Teen Boat
with John Green, who was on the last episode. So,
right.
And you guys went the distance and did a special holiday background for this holiday special. For those who are listening in the audio, you should watch the video because Dave drew a special fireplace behind them.
I figured since it's a holiday special, we have to have our cozy setting. So I drew a fireplace with a mantle with some family and friends on the mantle. And I made sure that we had some sound effects because it's a comics fireplace after all. So there's some crackly sound effects and some presents, which are filled with comics, of course. Perhaps the comics that we'll talk about on the show today.
Probably. So awesome to have you guys back. And I should say that just for the people who are tuning in for the first time, you guys, this is going on our fourth year now of doing this. It was Comics Are Great episode 42 was the first end of the year episode with Raina. Then we did episode 69 with Raina. And then episode 91 last year. So I hope this tradition continues. So thank you guys. And then also in studio, we have Androzd, no relation.
Hello.
Androzd of the Ann Arbor District Library. Actually, we are related, I guess.
You
by
are
law.
My spouse.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So full disclosure, we're married.
And I also work at the Ann Arbor District Library.
Yes.
Yes.
As?
The librarian.
Your production librarian. Isn't that the official title?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means that I work in IT and I get to do all sorts of fantastic things to support all of the wonderful projects that happen here at the library, including ordering books, doing programming, getting events to happen. I'm working on tools collections.
Can we talk about the tools collection just for a second? Because that just got rolled out last weekend at Tiny Expo.
Well, no, the tools collection has been
the art tools collection.
We are starting to roll out more art tools.
So, like what? Oh, I can get a paintbrush at the library? That's
no,
dumb.
No, we are trying to get things in people's hands that they wouldn't necessarily try out, like a paintbrush, which has a very low cost for you to get involved in painting. You can spend like a couple bucks and get a paintbrush. We have Wacom tablets. So there are now graphics tablets if people want to get into digital art. Yarn swifts and ball winders.
Spinning wheels, right?
Soon to be coming. Spinning wheels, sewing machines, a bunch sewing of machines. Really exciting things.
I could check out a sewing machine at the library.
Excited about, yes.
That is really cool. And I could check out Wacom tablets at the library.
Yes, you can.
That's amazing. And I mean, you got like all sizes. Like you got like a mammoth one that you can check out.
Yes, we have the Intuos Pro, which is really large and was a little bit too much for me to handle. I'm used to drawing in a small surface. So yeah. It was kind of overwhelming when I tried it out to be like, I have all this space that I can draw on.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to try out though. And I think that I could get used to drawing on something that large.
Could you?
Yes.
It was hurting my shoulder working that big. But I just think it's amazing that we live in a time where your library lends out professional art tools to the public. That is so cool. And it's so cool that you get to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
And we should say you're the selector of comics for the library now.
I am selecting comics, which I am very thrilled to be doing.
Yeah. Wow. So that's a lot of power to wield. So
it's a great responsibility. Yes. I could be not ordering something that the community really needs to have. So,
but you're also like so conscientious because my hands went like this when I found out that you were the comic selector, but I don't have any special privileges in that
regard.
No, you do not.
Nope.
That's a bummer. Okay, well, we're supposed to talk about comics for the holidays, and so I assembled a crack team to talk about. It's middle of December at the time of this live stream, so you may be wondering, like, this is like, we're kind of like in like the real last minute shopping kind of time period. As a matter of fact, Raina, today's the last day to order signed copies of your books, right? From the Astoria Bookshop?
The local indie bookstore that I work with in my neighborhood has graciously been able to allow people to order books through their website, and they'll ship them anywhere in the world. And today is the last day for domestic orders. So the bookstore is called the Astoria Bookshop. Their website is astoriabooks.com. And if you want to go right to the Raina Telgemeier page, it's astoriabooks.com. Wait, Astoria Books or Astoria Bookshop? Sorry, astoriabookshop.com/Raina, R-A-I-N-A. And I'll go and sign them for you tomorrow, and then you'll get them in time for Christmas.
Oh, wow. You're going to sign them like day of shipping?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're doing things on the ball over here.
After you did tens of thousands of autographs on all those special books for Black Friday that went out. Oh my gosh.
It was 5,500.
Oh, only.
On top of all the books you signed while on tour.
Yeah. 2014's been a year.
Yeah, I bet it has. I bet we could do a whole episode just on like your year in review. You could also find the post about where to get the books at goraina.com. Mm-hmm. That's one of the top posts on there. This is the time where it's like, okay, I got to get something for somebody. I don't know what to buy. And then also, maybe you want to buy some comics for somebody for the holiday season. So we've all got a big pile of books to, talk up to say like, this is who it's for. This is why you should get it. This is why the story is interesting. This is why the book stands apart. Who wants to start? Who wants to go first?
I'm happy to.
Okay, please.
All right. So a book that came out in September that I'm very, very fond of is Tomboy by Liz Prince. And this is Liz's autobiographical story of growing up as a tomboy in a world that doesn't really know what to do with people that fall outside of the totally standard gender norms. And Liz is amazing because she's from a really early age just sort of identified simply as herself. And this book goes up till the point where she's in high school. And, you know, she does things like try out for the baseball team and then have to stop playing baseball because puberty doesn't really jive with certain aspects of that. And then, you know, just like having to wear dresses and a skirt at Catholic school and her crushes on boys, which people don't quite understand because they're like, but you're a tomboy, you must also be a lesbian. So this is a really honest and touching book about someone who really knows who they are. And I want to say that it's a good book for readers who have read Smile and have sort of grown into like the high school years. And it's not perfect for readers of Smile because there is some more mature content in it, there is some swearing and some smoking and some, you know, just discussion of sexuality and gender. But for high schoolers, I think it's a fantastic, fantastic read. So that's my first recommendation. And it's published by Zest Books. So you can find this hopefully in most bookstores. And it's gotten onto some of the best of the year lists. And I really, really love it. It's really awesome.
So Tomboy by
Liz Prince.
Liz Prince.
She goes by Comic Nerd on Twitter. And that's nerd without an E in it. It's N-R-R-D.
N-R-R-D. I mean, it would seem like those kind of themes would be appropriate for a lot of high schoolers. That's the age where you're getting exposed to that kind of stuff. Even if you're not participating in that kind of stuff, you see kids doing stuff like that. Like, tobacco shows up when you're in high school, depending on what high school you go to, right?
Tobacco didn't show up at my high school at all.
Oh, well... Well, that was the qualifier that I threw in there. But like, even at the school Ann and I went to when we were kids, like there was like the cool kid in the leather jacket who sat out in the atrium at lunch and like just defiantly lit up, right? We didn't emulate his behavior, but they were there.
They were there.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them.
So, but yes, I guess you do have to throw out those disclaimers, Raina, just because the age we live in and this country is very diverse. Dave, do you have a pick?
Well, speaking of a diverse world, some of my choices are sort of playing to the we need diverse books theme, which was a sort of a big, got a lot of push this year, I guess. A lot of people sort of talking about the need for diversity in books of all ranges, but comics is a good place. And I'm going to start with a Marvel comic because most of the time we talk about indie books and I'm always pushing kids comics and the sort of indie self-published stuff or small press. But Marvel's actually been doing some really amazing things for, I mean, they've always have, but
Ms. Marvel,
like in the past couple of years. So this one book in particular we'll talk about is called Ms. Marvel. And I heard a lot of people talking about this specifically because it sort of plays to this typical Marvel Comics teen angst, Spider-Man-y, like, you know, insecure teenager dealing with powers, metaphor, power fantasy, all that classic stuff. But it does it with a Muslim American teenage girl who becomes Miss Marvel, a sort of pre-existing classic superhero that's been sort of reimagined for the current times. And the writer is G. Willow Wilson, and the artist is Adrian Alfano, who a lot of people might know from the Runaways series, which was also really popular with teenagers and people who like sort of like superhero comics that are in the Marvel universe, but maybe not so entrenched in the Marvel universe that you can't understand it, that tends to be a big problem for me.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And there's a little bit of that with this where they're referencing the Avengers and pre-existing characters. But for the most part, you can identify those characters because they're pretty famous at this point. But it's a really wonderful story. And it really taps into all those classic Stan Lee teen angst stuff about, you know, not feeling like you're part of the group and trying to fit in with other teenagers and being cool. But it does it specifically with a culture that as a white, a male American, I may not know that much about. So it's insightful and it feels like I'm being introduced to a culture that I don't know a lot about. And I'm hoping that they're doing a good job representing that. But so far so good. It's very action packed and the art is really cartoony and trippy and weird. And, it reminds me a lot of, the Plastic Man comics in some ways, because her powers allow her to sort of stretch and grow and transform into like really weird shapes and stuff. And that is one of the things that comics does so well, is letting the illustrators just kind of go crazy, with the proportions of her anatomy as it goes crazy. And it gets pretty crazy.
I haven't read it myself, but I've heard that it also isn't afraid to show downtime. Like they will actually spend a sequence where she's just doing normal people stuff instead of always just fighting with like, it's like, you know, like in Spider-Man, the cliche is that like fight, web sling and think about all my problems, show up at the Bugle, get yelled at by Jameson, go back out, fight, web sling and think about my problems, right? Like you don't get to see Peter Parker make toast. But I heard that like there's scenes in that are actually more like watching people do normal things a little bit. Is that so or no?
That's certainly the case with another book that I'm going to mention, but I guess there's a little bit of that, but I'm going to say that it felt like Spider-Man to me in that sort of same way, except instead of J. Jonah Jameson, it's her parents, or other teenagers that she's dealing with. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot, you know, there's a lot of superheroics, and there's robots, and there's all the sort of stuff that you would expect from a superhero comic. But the characters feel human, and the relationships feel real. There's a lot of books that I feel like try to strike that balance between the superheroics and the human moments. And this book definitely feels like it does a good job with that. Hmm. So definitely worth checking out.
Ms. Marvel. I've heard a lot of great things about it.
Yeah. And the volume is called No Normal, the first trade paperback. And this is definitely T plus is what it's listed as. So not really for younger kids. There's definitely some real intense moments, and teens drinking and partying and sort of the same sort of stuff that Raina was mentioning in Tomboy. Although I think Tomboy is even more frank about it. This feels a little bit more like this is sort of like Teen Boat in the same way where it's like, you know, teens going to parties and whether or not that's, you know, they're going to get in trouble for it and that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. Anne, did you want to go next or you want me to?
I can go next.
Okay.
I can take it completely back into indie comics away from Marvel. So I have here Worst Things Happen at Sea by Kelly Strom. I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. It was published by Nobrow Press. And this book is really interesting because it takes you away from comics. So as somebody who isn't necessarily into comics and you want to buy them a comic, it is this ongoing story of monsters and horrible things happening across seven seas, and it kind of looks like an engraving or a woodcut, so it crosses over into the fine arts realm, which people often complain that comics do not do. And I've heard that it took the artist, I want to say, 3 years to do this, but it's amazing because there's so many little things going on. You can find different monsters and people, and it's just a really fun thing to explore. And there's also a sea shanty on the inside of the jacket.
Oh, really?
Yes. And there's more illustration on the back. So the whole thing comes out and unfolds, and you can just get totally absorbed into the adventure that is what's happening at sea with the monsters.
The colors and, like you said, like the woodcut engraving style of it is like, yeah, you can totally just get lost in this thing. And the whole thing, I don't know, I want to pan back or pull back. I mean, the whole thing opens up into this gigantic piece on both sides. Look at that. Oh, hit my head. That is amazing. So this is like for the person who likes to get lost in those Where's Waldo books.
Yeah, it would totally be for somebody like that.
Yeah, and for just art fans in general. Oh my God, yeah, like here's like the ship getting all smashed to pieces and there's like a million people falling out of them.
In one of the scenes, there's a narwhal and yeah, there's really cool stuff going on. I was sold tortoises. As soon as I saw the narwhal.
Giant tortoises with a boat that's run aground on the back of the tortoise's back, and there's a guy who set up a campfire to like call for help from other people. You see that?
Yes.
That's pretty awesome. So this is Worst Things Happen at Sea by Kelly Strom, Nobrow Press. Nobrow, are they the same people who do the Hilda books?
I believe so. Yes, I think.
Hilda and the Midnight Giant. Okay, cool. All right. Well, for me, gosh, where do I want to start? I'm going to go more mainstreamy, but not mainstream comics, right? Like when we say mainstream comics, we always think of superheroes or at least people in the comics world. But I mean like just general interest kind of thing. Box Brown's Andre the Giant. Now, I had a funny conversation with a 19-year-old a couple weeks back where they were looking at the guest list for a comic convention, and they saw a bunch of cartoonist names and they saw a bunch of pro wrestlers names. And this 19-year-old said to me, he's like, what does wrestling have to do with comics? And I was like, oh, that's right. It's more separate nowadays. But when we were kids, like they seemed like, Dave, were you into pro wrestling when you were a little kid? A little bit at least?
When I was a little kid, during the whole Hulkamania, Junkyard Dog,
Cyndi
Lauper, time for wrestling.
When the Saturday morning cartoon was around. Because I was into it then too.
Were you really?
I loved the Saturday morning cartoon. Yeah.
Okay. So like, yeah, they were just like really, really embedded in pop culture at that time. And now it seems like it's a little bit more distinct than like the girls who are on Tumblr reading Noelle Stevenson stuff aren't necessarily super into, you know, Dusty Rhodes or whoever's popular now. But anyway, it's Box Brown did a biography of Andre the Giant. This was published by First Second, and it is, if you are a fan of Seth, if you are a fan of Fantagraphics books, I think you'd get a kick out of this. The art, at any rate, but also like it's the story of how it's the story of his life. It's the story of like growing up on a farm in France and learning, like just starting out being like just a really, really big kid. Like he couldn't take the bus anymore as of age 12 because he was just so large. But he didn't know until well into his 20s that he had some kind of condition that was like life threatening. It's how it chronicles his rise to fame as a wrestler. It tells a lot of stories that come from word of mouth, other wrestlers who say like he did this, he did that. The man could drink; he could really drink. Like he would say, "Bring me a quadruple screwdriver in a pint glass," and then he would say, "Keep them coming." And chronicles his life in Japan. How he became like a huge wrestling star in Japan and then eventually became a huge star in the United States and then leads all the way up to WrestleMania 3 where he passes the torch to Hulk Hogan. And it's really funny and somewhat heartbreaking. And Box Brown, you can tell he really loves the subject matter and he has a lot of respect for Andre, but he doesn't pull any punches with some of the stories that he tells in there. There's some things he does that aren't quite so wonderful, but it's always couched with this whole this tension of having this really awesome life where he's surrounded by all these friends and he gets to travel and he gets to do all these exciting things, but everywhere he goes he's treated like there's this giant monster in the room, right? You can't go anywhere. Like, how do you become incognito when you're 7'4" and weigh 600 pounds? You can't, right? And especially once he became like a wrestling star. But It was a great read, and of course, for a second, I mean, just look for that logo and then just buy it. Yeah, Box Brown, Andre the Giant. I really, really got a kick out of it. And Box Brown does great stuff. So, who's next?
Are we going back around the table?
Sure, we can go back around the table. I got to take the scarf off. I'm boiling over.
So my next recommendation is Strong Female Protagonist, Book 1 by Brennan Lee Mulligan and Molly Ostertag. And this is a webcomic that was kickstarted very successfully into a graphic novel. And it's a story about a girl named Allison Green who was a superhero sort of in her past life and has decided to sort of leave those days behind and just be a regular girl and go to school for art in New York City. But her past keeps kind of coming back to haunt her. So it's got sort of like a X-Men-y mutant type of culture going on. There are superheroes, there are supervillains. It's about class and prejudice and politics and just being, you know, a regular kid who sort of wants to lead like a regular life and can't do so because she's sort of struggling with right versus wrong and superpower versus, you know, what do you do with that power? And it's really interesting, and I'm proud of these guys for doing this all by themselves and turning it into something that's kind of taken on a life of its own.
That's a strong recommendation coming from you, Raina, because you don't typically go in for the action adventure mutant X-Men-y kind of stuff,
that's
right?
That's true. But I mean, Dave and I delved into X-Men pretty deeply when we were writing X-Men Misfits, and there was a lot for me to like about it, and this kind of has the same type of stuff that I liked about reading X-Men. And I don't know if you can still get the print version. I believe Molly just said in the last day or two that the print run sold out, and it was a pretty big print run. So again, really proud of these guys. But you can read it online. So if you go to strongfemaleprotagonist.com, I'm assuming they will also reprint this shortly because they should. More people should read it.
Or maybe a publisher will pick it up.
Yeah, that's right. And they're being distributed by Top Shelf also. So that makes it a little bit easier to get the book than if you were just ordering it directly from the creators.
Did we have a copy of that, or is it the library's copy?
We were reading an ARC. Digital ARC.
Okay, yeah. So that's right. Yeah, we have a... Okay, but so it will be in the library's collection eventually. Okay. I just couldn't remember where I saw. I remember seeing you reading it, and I was trying to remember, like, do we have it? So where did it come from? So when you say that, Raina, like, it dives into X many things that you wound up liking, specifically, can you name, like, just one of those things about, like, when you were digging into the X-Men that you found that you liked that also is reflected in this book?
Just being different. Just people who are different from the rest of us or normal society and how they grapple with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So living in a profound isolation of being a young person, right? Which we all feel when we're young people. All right, cool. Strong female protagonist. And the link will be included in the show notes. Dave, what do you got? What?
Okay. I think in some of my book reviews, I'm going to do like some groupings. But first, Jersey, just to call back to the previous show, I forgot to mention that I drew a snowman in the back, too. hiding behind the Christmas tree there.
Actually,
sort of lurking ominously.
We've been going about 20 minutes.
Last year's conversation about my love of snowmen.
Well, I was going to say, like, last year, I remember we took, like, a little bit of a break from doing the book recommendations to talk about, to pick your brains about what are the holiday specials that you guys are most responding to this year. Because I was watching on Twitter, was it Tony Cliff who was, like, challenging you guys and giving you the throwdown of, like, look at this bank of holiday specials. I bet you there's at least a couple you haven't seen in here. And, like, there was, like, one.
There was one.
So, okay. Like, I want to take a break.
I'm excited about it. Anytime I find a new one, I'm excited by.
Right. Well, yeah. No. You guys aren't.
Well, we could talk about that at the end.
No. I want to do it now. I want to take a break and, like, talk about what are the specials right now that you guys are most responding to. Like, take a break from books, talk about TV just for a second. What's the one holiday special everybody should watch this year?
We just watched the Elf stop motion special, and that's definitely worth watching.
That's good.
The visuals are worth watching. Like, those are some of the nicest looking stop motion puppets I've seen in a while.
Elf, as in the based on the.
It's an adaptation of the Broadway musical, which is an adaptation of the film starring Will Ferrell.
Oh,
so
wow.
If you like, you'll love it, Jersey, because it's like it takes all the things you probably liked about Elf and has none of the things I didn't like about Elf.
Hmm.
Because my thing about Elf was that it was a great character, great setup, but then it was just an excuse to sort of do, like, poop jokes or, like, you know, sort of crude humor or just sort of typical, like, things that it would have been in any Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah.
This sort of strips all that stuff out and just makes it about the sincere elf sort of making the world into, like, a more elf-like, magical, Christmassy place, which I think is more my speed. But anyways, the puppets are just freaking amazing. We also discovered a really old one from 1977 called A Cosmic Christmas that I'm really curious for you to check out, Jersey. It's very it's by Nelvana, so it's Canadian, but it's called A Cosmic Christmas. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's definitely like of its time. It definitely has that sort of like weird. You know, just it's so hard to describe that sort of 70s animation style that like Ralph Bakshi was doing and just sort of Twice Upon a Time and things like that. But definitely check those out.
Well, Nelvana did the Care Bears movie, did they not?
Sure did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not a testament to anything.
Well, I'm just saying like that.
This, haven't you ever seen like any like sort of like Nirvana's sort of like weirder sort of. Straight, like, you know, the thing where like humans are just different colors for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Characters have like really strange proportions and are just sort of like overly animated in places where they, for, you know, like someone just can't just pick up a cup of coffee. They sort of have, there has to be like a crazy amount of frame cycles to pick up that cup of coffee.
Okay. Yeah.
Weird and stuff like that.
All right. A Cosmic Christmas. I will check that out in the coming weeks as we lead up to Christmas. And did you have a holiday special that is a go-to every year? What's our go-to?
What's our go-to? I'm blanking.
I put you on the spot.
You did put me on the spot. I haven't even started to delve into holiday specials yet.
The Elf Christmas episode. We do watch that every year.
Yeah, we do watch that every year.
Which is
heartbreaking.
It's just him saying no problem in front of a tree for a half hour, isn't it?
I think that the world fell in love with Elf after the Elf Christmas special, because I think I was in the fourth or fifth grade when it came out, and I was getting made fun of shamelessly for liking Elf. And then that came out, and everybody was like, oh, maybe Elf's okay. Because Elf has a heart. He goes to a hospital and ends up helping people who are in need.
Because the whole conceit of the show is he can't be seen by the public, because then the NASA scientists will come and dissect him, right? Like in all alien stories.
Or the government would come and
In the 80s, they always made
NASA would do bad things to people.
I'm trolling you. But he gets put on a Toys for Tots cart or something like that.
Yes.
And mistaken for a stuffed animal, and this little girl who's dying befriends him, and then he reveals that he's alive in the zero hour so that he can comfort her in her final moments, kind of thing. Oh my God, it's hard. It's a hard special to get through.
And he also rescues a man who is suicidal, and it's
a guy's wife dies, and then he's going to give all of his stuff away. Nothing left to live for. And so
Elf reveals himself to this man as well. I say Christmas angel. Kind of. It's a Wonderful Lifestyle.
Itself. But it is. It actually is really emotionally difficult, right?
Yes, I cry every year when I watch it. And I know what's coming, and I still cry.
Okay, all right. So break time over. Now we get to your next book recommendation, Dave.
Okay. This is sort of double recommendation for the recovering goths out there, like myself. So even though I love snowmen now, I went through my sort of melodramatic teen phase, of which Edward Scissorhands was a really, really big part of my teenagedom. Mm. I'm gonna admit it. I was really into that movie, Edward Scissorhands, and I related to it, and I probably did very emo paintings inspired by Tim Burton movies. So for all those people like myself, the Edward Scissorhands comic that just came out from IDW, it's written by Kate Leth. And it's drawn by Drew Rausch. Drew has been an artist for Slave Labor Graphics on tons of projects for them, mostly creator-owned stuff, some collaborations with other artists and writers. This is a really high-profile thing for him, and his style is it's such an interesting choice, because you can't tell from the cover, so I should probably see if I can open it up. But the art is, back to that lack of a better word, very cartoony, very sort of Chuck Jones animation, very expressive, big eyes.
It kind of reminds me of the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Yes, it does look sort of like the Beetlejuice cartoon. I don't know why I didn't make that connection, and I wonder if Drew kind of intentionally did that. But the story picks up quite a few years after the movie, and deals with the granddaughter character that's introduced at the very end of Edward Scissorhands. And it's actually really kind of thoughtful, and definitely for fans of that movie. They're really respecting the mythology and trying to build off that and sort of doing a sort of logical next step. It was actually really good. I bought this more as a curiosity piece, as oh my God, I could never imagine an Edward Scissorhands comic. When I was a kid, that's just crazy to me.
Well, because
it did a really good job with it. It's really, I didn't just like it just from a nostalgic standpoint. I actually kind of enjoyed it just as a book. It's actually pretty good.
Well, yeah.
It's such a surprise considering the people involved, but I'm still a natural born skeptic when it comes to, childhood things being sort of brought back.
Well, especially because Edward Scissorhands is this kind of self-contained fairy tale, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I wanted to see more out of Edward Scissorhands.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to know if he did anything after Winona Ryder's character dies, right?
Exactly. But that said, in comic form, you can sometimes get away with that stuff. You can distance yourself enough from the movie, but they do a good job. Can I just real quickly add to that? On a similar note, they're making new Sandman comics, and much like Edward Scissorhands, Sandman was a big part of my high school years, and I think a lot of people got into comics because of Sandman and stuff like Sandman. The Vertigo line in the late 90s, early 2000s was a huge part of our lives, the edgy comics, the literary comics. And I didn't, I don't think a lot of people may not even realize that they're making new Sandman comics and that Neil Gaiman is writing them. I found out this because I was in Miami and a guy found out I like comics and started talking to me about the comics he liked and mentioned it. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know they're making new Sandman comics. That seems like a really big deal to people of my generation. And it's drawn by J.H. Williams III. Holy cow, that guy is a really good illustrator. They're really, really, really beautiful. And similar to the book that Anne just showed, it's got a fold-out spread. It's got the double fold out spread, crazy elaborate scenes like that.
Oh wow.
I first saw in Frank Miller's Ronin mm-hmm. book. That blew me away. So yeah.
You know, speaking of intended audiences for these things, something I found in my years of teaching is that to this day I still get in my teen classes or in my preteen classes, that little girl who just reads nothing but manga. Like, all she'll read is, like, you know, she's plowing through Bleach. She's plowing through, you know, Fruits Basket. And that's all she'll read. And the parents will say, how do we get her to read something beyond manga? You know, even other comics, just, you know, that's all I can get her to read. And that always makes parents go, I'm nervous. And I found that a lot of times Sandman is like the bridge comic to introduce them back into Western comics. Like, it works every time. They turn 13, give them Sandman, and then boom, they're like, oh, there's a world beyond manga, and now I have a wider appreciation of comics. Like, if I put Avengers in front of them, doesn't work. But if I put Sandman in front of them, that seems to always do the trick. And Fables, too, but Fables is a little bit older. I wouldn't want a 13-year-old necessarily reading Fables.
Hey, Jersey.
Yes.
I know we're supposed to go in order, but that segues so perfectly into one of my recommendations.
Please.
That I just wrote in here. Okay. So this is the Dirty Diamonds anthology, which is published by Claire Folkman and Kelly Phillips, I believe, right? Kelly Phillips. And it's an all-girl anthology of various topics depending on the issue. But this one is about comics. So it's all stories about the creators' first exposure to comics.
Oh wow.
Like, what got them into them and what got them drawing them. And you see a lot of stories about Sailor Moon. You see a story about Captain Underpants. You see a story about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, all from different creators. And it's really cool to read because it's like their stories of how they fell in love with the thing and then how that related into them becoming professionals and this now as adults and as the people that they have become.
Who put that out?
It's like an indie anthology called Dirty Diamonds, and their website's dirtydiamonds.net. I was right. Claire Folkman and Kelly Phillips are the editors, and I think it's like an ongoing thing. So they do a different subject for every anthology. This is issue number 5.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, Dirty Diamonds.
.net.
All right, cool. All right, well, speaking of comics on the web, I'll get to one of my recommendations. I have become obsessed with this comic, and this is a comic by Megan Brennan. It's called Pencil Pup. I know I've talked it up in a lot of places, but she has done something really unique and special with this comic. It is about, did I do this one last year, Dave? Tell me I didn't.
You've talked about it on Comics Are Great.
Okay.
Specifically on the Christmas episode.
But she's got 3 volumes out now. Right. And like, first of all, these mini comics are so darn cute. I mean, she like made the first volume where it's like a composition book that when you open it up, like there's like the notebook paper and there's Pencil Pup. And the second one is like I don't know what kind of book this is. It's like a scrapbook kind of deal with another cut image that opens to the notebook paper. The third one is this amazing Lisa Frank cover. That with the sparkly tape on the side. And I know she went through a lot of trouble to find just the right kind of sparkly tape to bind the book. But what's it about? What's the content? It's about a girl who wakes up in this weird paper dimension where she doesn't know where she is. She doesn't know how she got there. She doesn't even know her name. We don't even know the girl's name, and we're 3 volumes in on this thing. And there's this little puppy with pencils for legs who keeps talking in this cheerful kind of larger-than-life way where, like, the speech, I don't even know if we can see this, but, like, Pencil Pup's speech will be, like, these giant word clouds behind him. And he's cheerfully ordering her to draw things with him and be a pal. And then there's this helper owl who shows up who doesn't give her much help. And it's all about her trying to figure out where she is, why she's there, and how do I get out? And every time she tries to leave or get away, she makes Pencil Pup very sad. And when Pencil Pup gets sad, he gets kind of angry in a very kind of cute and scary way. So like I've said before, it reminds me of the Twilight Zone episode. Do you remember this one, Anne? The one where like the four people wake up in this room with no door, and there's like a clown, and there's like a military guy, and there's a ballerina, and they don't know why they're there. Do you remember that one?
Yes. And it does have that same feel.
Yeah, it has like this kind of like eerie, cute feeling to it of this anxious, how do I get out of here? There's something sinister going on, but it's adorable. So it's,
yeah, when you pick it up, you think that it's just going to be cuteness that's going to overwhelm you. But then there's this dark side, this lovely, eerie dark side that it's creepy.
But I mean, this kind of goes back to like the Edward Scissorhands thing. Dave is like, I think of Tim Burton stuff. Tim Burton navigates that line very well. He can make it something that feels cute and warm, but also kind of creepy. But she does it in a way where it emphasizes the cute first and the creepy is in like the undertones of the book. Anyway, she's doing something super special with this book, and I think everybody should be going to pencilpup.com and reading it and buying all the mini comics. And how has she not been published yet is what I want to know. So pencilpup.com. Get it for anybody who enjoys cute things and the Twilight Zone. I would say that's the audience for this thing. And I love it. So who wants to go next? Anne, do you want something?
Let's see. I'm probably going to take it in a totally different direction. Although this kind of doesn't. Let's see. We've got Jules Pfeiffer. Kill My Mother. Not autobiographical. He does not want to kill his mother. Okay. This is taking us back to... I'll give that to you. All right. For those not familiar with Jules Pfeiffer, he usually does like satiric political social commentary in lovely line drawings. This is his take on a noir comic, kind of shooting back to the days of Will Eisner and Milton Caniff, like The Spirit, also kind of reminiscent of noir movies like Maltese Falcon, Big Sleep, those sorts of things. So it also, the art style, it's, you can tell it's Jules Pfeiffer because of the line work, the very loose, sketchy, beautiful line work. I love his stuff. But also he kind of does a throwback to American Realist painting, which is something that Will Eisner did as well. So it's harking back to maybe like the 40s and 50s storytelling, serials, those types of stories, not the serials that everybody is all crazy about right now, which is on NPR. It's it's not that type of serial, although there is like, crime involved. It's like an ongoing story, escapist, like Great Depression era type of serial. And this is definitely for adults, but I think that most anyone who likes a good mystery is going to love this.
And is a fan of like 1940s kind of movies and noir film, and also just like really, really cool, like energized art. Like that, it's got like that awesome scribbly thing that he does where like it looks loose and unfinished, but it leaves so much life in all the figures.
Yeah, it's just showing movement in a wonderful, minimalistic way.
Yeah, yeah, he's awesome. When did this come out?
This year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Kill My Mother, graphic novel by Jules Pfeiffer. I gotta hijack it and go to mine because I got one that's related to that. Who here has read Brood Hollow by Chris Straub? Anybody? And I got a digital version on my tablet. So Brood Hollow is a comic. It's a web comic, but he's also been collecting them in print form. It's at broodhollow.com, and it takes place in the 1930s, and it is, I would describe it as X-Files meets Twin Peaks meets Northern Exposure meets Gilmore Girls. It's like this weird, like this guy, Wadsworth Zane, inherits an antique store in this strange 1930s town where everybody says things like, you know, they say all sorts of, now you're on the trolley, you know, like old like 1930s expressions. And Wadsworth has a little bit of an obsessive compulsive disorder where he has this pattern through which he lives his life where doors must always remain shut. And if a door is even like a little bit of a crack open, he's like, that's a problem. That's a problem. We got to shut that. Why is that shelf open? Why is that drawer open kind of thing? But it gets revealed over time that there's something to this pattern because when he leaves the door ajar one night, these glowing eyes are in the closet kind of thing. And it turns out that this town, Brood Hollow, has some kind of supernatural bend to it. And it's all about him trying to navigating these crazy, colorful local characters. Like you've got like the local lawyer slash real estate agent who wants to take over the antique shop. And, you know, he's like, oh, you're an interloper. You don't even like this town. I should have that antique shop. You're just here because you inherited it. You know, these guys, there's like these local boys, these local toughs who are like big, strong guys with giant mustaches who seem really intimidating, but are actually really cheerful guys. It's during Prohibition, so they make their own special drink out of it, like some kind of crazy tree bark. Eventually, Wadsworth takes on a little bat as a pet. So it's got like that kind of colorful character thing that you see in like old shows like Newhart and Northern Exposure and stuff. But it's got like this really seriously creepy horror thing to it. And one of the things that Chris Straub has talked about when he came on the Comics Are Great show, as a matter of fact, is that one of the things he was exploring was how humor and horror share a lot of the same mechanics, like, you know, the jump scare, the punchlines, misdirecting your expectations and then surprising you with something. And one of the things he does in the book that I was really surprised by is he actually pulled off what I felt was like a jump scare in a comic, which is kind of hard to do when you think about it. Like when you have static images juxtaposed together, as Scott McCloud would say. But it's if you're a fan of 1930s kind of fiction, if you like your Steinbeck and you like your horror, then I think you would enjoy Brood Hollow. That's at broodhollow.com. So who's next? Did anybody have a segue from that?
well, sort of balancing the creepy and the cute, or I guess, and the funny too, yeah. The Hilda books. I think you were mentioning these a little bit before. Published by Nobrow Press, which is a really great indie publisher, I think based out of the UK. Mm-hmm. The book series is by Luke Pearson, who, oh my God, I you know, this is one of those things where people were talking about it for a couple of years, and I was kind of slow to get on the bandwagon. But once I did, and I equate it to the experience I had when I first watched My Neighbor Totoro by Miyazaki, my first Miyazaki movie.
Oh, wow.
These books have that same level of just like, what is this? Where has this been my whole life? Why doesn't everybody know about this? It's a wonderful, I've only read three of them so far, but they all star this girl, Hilda, who's just sort of an average kind of girl, almost like a little Lulu type of classic, iconic girl cartoon character. But she always sort of lives in she sort of moves around and lives in different settings that are clearly mystical. There seems to be, you know, trolls or creatures or monsters sort of living in the forest or underneath rocks, and kind of gets involved in very supernatural adventures with the sort of mystical creatures that surround her. That's the best way to describe it. But the reason to read it is just because it's, I think, comics at its best. Kids comics, especially all ages. This truly is the all ages moniker. I can't not talk about it with hyperbole because when I read it, it's like a punch in the face. It's a punch in the gut. Like, I recommend a lot of comics all the time, but these comics were the ones that I was just like, this is the best thing. Like this, like it reminds me of when I read Calvin and Hobbes. Like you're just like, this is just comics at its best. Like this guy is so young and doesn't even realize like how talented he is. And he's just making comics that just do all the things that are great about comics. And I can't say enough good things about it. And if you really want to get all out, you know, with Christmas, you can't just give comics, you got to give some toys. So
I'm gonna
recommend the Hilda toy.
I didn't know there was a Hilda
Flying
toy.
Eye Books, which is the, I think, the all ages imprint of Nobrow Publishing. This toy of Hilda is beautiful. Comes in a really gorgeous box designed by the cartoonist featuring his art, and it even has a comic on the back.
Hilda?
Not the person that like wants to keep all his toys in a box, but it's hard to take it out because the box is just as beautiful as.
Are any of the creatures that are featured in the books made into toys as well, or right now is it just Hilda?
I don't know if they've yet been made into toys, but they're definitely featured on the box. You know, this is just so cool, like to see a character that's, you know, this is not like a super famous character yet. This is like, you know, there've only been a few books. It's by a sort of smaller press. So to see a really beautiful toy made, you know, from the drawings of this cartoonist is really exciting for me. as a fellow cartoonist. But yeah, holy cow, the Hilda books are so good.
Wow. So I
recommend them like more, like those are sort of like my cross year. Like there are certain books that I would say that were the best books that I've read all year. But when I read these, when I read Hilda in the Middle of the Midnight Giant, I was like, this is one of the best books I've ever read.
Wow. What I also love is that
is equally as fun.
I love also the format. They're doing that great big album format that you see in Europe, but you don't see in the United States so much, right?
Yeah, and every page has like lots of panels, and you just can pour through them, and it's just, they're so spooky and moody and lush and evocative.
So okay. The Hilda books, Raina, go.
So, I mean, this book actually kind of gets into a similar space as the Hilda books, but with a little bit more distance. It's a book called Nothing is Forgotten by Ryan Andrews. This was also self-published through Kickstarter. And it's a collection of four short stories that the cartoonist has published online and has now collected them. And they're sort of stories about characters wandering through environments and looking for things. And it, you know, they're like little poems. So they touch on life and death and aging and birth and love and loss and all the things you want in good stories, but they're short and satisfying. And Ryan is a really wonderful illustrator. He's working mostly in black and white with occasional touches of color. And you see giants wandering through landscapes, and you see trees with eyes in them and tunnels and stuff like that. It's very evocative, and you can read some of them online still. I know he published Nothing is Forgotten, the short story, as a Tumblr piece, and he was just putting up one panel either per day or per week or whatever it was. So people were reading the story as it was unfolding. And now you can sit down and read it again and again. And I recommend it to people who like Miyazaki and people that like Emily Carroll's work. It's got a similar sensibility. Sort of horrific, but not necessarily scary.
So like maybe haunting? Would that be?
Yeah, I think of it as haunting for sure. I believe he goes by Hey Ryan A on the internet.
Hey Ryan A. All right. And the link will be in the show notes of the book as well. All right. I got to get to, we're almost in lightning round, guys, because we are coming up on the end. But I got to talk about Sing No Evil. Can we talk about Sing No Evil?
Yeah.
By JP Ahonen and KP Alari. First of all, I mean, just the cartoonist in me is like, this dude knows how to color. He knows how to color. So good. But content, let's recommend it for content. Anybody who has been listening to the show for any amount of time has heard me go on and on about why I think comics are the greatest thing in the entire world, how they're like poetry to me, and how like they're the highest form of visual communication in the entire world. And I've also gone on record to say, talking with people who are really, really jazzed about something always makes me a little bit more jazzed about the thing. Like you talk to a person who's like really, really into bicycles, and they're like so into bicycles, they can talk for hours about bicycles, and I walk away going like, wow, I kind of like bicycles a lot more now. This book will do that for music. The story is all about how music is so awesome that it is literally like magic. and like you can perform magic with music, but even takes care to tie it into science, where it says like when you go into string theory about where all matter is just energy vibration that's like all that turns into atoms, that turns into molecules, that turns into us. Like there's even a little bit of that in there. But what is it about? It's about this kid who's alone and special. He like really, really loves music. He's in this band and he wants it to be perfect, but he's just not doing that terrific of a job of it, and he's jeopardizing his relationship with his wife. And nobody seems to understand what he's really going for in his work. And when he's alone and he's working really hard at it, he finds that doing the music his way, right, like he found himself levitating at one point. He thought, oh, maybe I'm just hallucinating. And there's this weird old guy who's in the band who's like, oh, the last time, this reminds me when I played with The Who, this reminds me when I played with the Rolling Stones. And he seems to have a million stories about his life as a musician. And the old man reveals like, oh, I'm actually 632 years old. And like, whatever, you know, you did too many shrooms back in the day, right? But there's like a suspension of disbelief because all the bands in the story have animals as drummers for some reasons. Like the band that they play in, there's a bear who's a drummer. Another band has a what is it? It's a badger for a drummer. And so like there's this weird kind of like unreality to the story, but things get really weird when we discover that the music, when done just the right way, actually does make it bends reality in certain ways, and bad things can happen if you don't do it right. And I went to find this page where the scenes where he's doing like this death metal band or this black metal band who's just screaming Satan. Look, just first of all, the coloring and also the way he expresses sound in the story is so good.
I first encountered this book, I think it was still published in Finnish. I was at Bannister's house. We were in France visiting, and Bannister handed it to me, and I started flipping through it, and every page I was just like, jeez. I was pissed off and really happy because it's so good to look at, and I couldn't read it because it wasn't in English, but
yeah,
I was just like, oh god,
that's like the highest compliment you could pay a comic, right? Is when you're like, it's making you so happy but making you so sad at the same time.
And I didn't need to read it because it was such a good comic.
Oh, it's so good.
The words almost didn't even matter. I mean, that's a total disservice to the writer. That's not true at all, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
I mean, nonetheless.
But like, he does all this great stuff with sound too, where like he covers up a word balloon with musical notes to show that it's difficult to hear what the guy's saying over top of the music that's going on in the background. He does things where the musical notes, this band is like playing a lot of electronic music, so all the musical notes have these hard edges and are more mathematical instead of like with the curves of the musical notes that we typically see. He does all these wonderful little subtle things to make us hear the music in the story, which you got to think about it. It's a challenge to try to tell a story with a lot of music in it when it's a comic, which is a silent medium. But in the end, our hero discovers that pursuing the music to perfection can yield wonderful and disastrous results. And there's this really, really great idea that they explore with vinyl and how vinyl is just capturing vibrations onto plastic, and the universe is made of vibrations after all. And they find this old relic with these grooves on it. And when they try to do something with that, bad things come out of it. So I won't spoil any more of that. You got to read it. It's so good. It's got bears playing the drums, people. but it's also just beautifully done. And I would recommend this to anybody comics reader or not, but especially that friend of yours who is like really, really into music and like has like a large vinyl collection all alphabetized. I think that they will really appreciate that. You could tell that JP really loves music a lot. And I think that he'll be preaching to the choir, to the person in your life who actually goes to the record store still. So,
can I build off that real quick with a quick mention of two books for the music fan of? There's actually two books that came out in the past 2 years about the concept of the Fifth Beatle. One is literally called The Fifth Beatle, and that one's about Brian Epstein, the Beatles manager, who had a really integral role into the creation of the Beatles. Now, I did not grow up listening to the Beatles. I don't know a lot about Beatles lore. So this was kind of an interesting read to find out, you know, about the sort of, you know, the creative behind the creative, you know, the person who helped do the sort of the business side and sort of, you know, worked hard for the Beatles, you know, behind the scenes. And there's a great quote from Paul McCartney on the back that says, if anyone was the Fifth Beatle, it was Brian. And yet there's this other book about Stuart Sutcliffe, who is another person who people consider the Fifth Beatle. He was the bassist in the band.
What's the title? Babies Black?
This one is called
Babies in Black.
Babies in Black, and this was published by First Second. I think it also, like, I think it was also an import of a French comic. And this one's in black and white in a sort of really charcoal, beautiful style. So for people who have, you know, the Beatles fan in their life, you might want to try one of these two books and or both and have a, you know, a book talk comparing and contrasting them. And you can decide for yourself who really is the Fifth Beatle.
Pete Best was. Comics. All right. So cool.
Comparisons.
All right. So we'll get to lightning round. I want to recommend this book. This is by, he is a friend of mine, but I love his work. And this is Beyond the Canopy by Jonathan Griffiths. And who's it for? It is for the person in your life who can't put down the Nintendo DS. If the person who has the 3DS and they can't stop playing it. Here's a world to get lost in that feels like a really awesome, funny Nintendo game. And the big idea is that there's these little sprite characters who are plant-based, and this little boy gets mixed up with some sarcastic talking skeletons. And the best part is when he goes to a lot of the story revolves around this restaurant called Che Kluckoff, run by a guy with a bag over his head named Grellas, whose entire staff is chickens. It's an entire cooking and waiting staff of chickens who do not talk. They don't say like, "Hi, I'm a chicken." They only say "buck, buck, buck." And it's really funny, and it's beautifully drawn, and there's two volumes out now. As a matter of fact, I've got to give Anne a present on the air because we didn't have volume two yet, so I had John personalize a copy of Beyond the Canopy volume two. So Merry Early Christmas.
Thank you. I can't wait to read it.
You're supposed to like look really excited and say, "Look how happy this makes her."
I'm extremely excited to read this. I've been wanting to read this for a long time, and we kept forgetting to get it when he was here. And...
But he did a special drawing for you on the inside of the sloth creature. See,
I love it.
Sign personalized books. Yeah, are even that's how you can upgrade your comics gift is get it signed because cartoonists always draw in the books.
So yes, you can get it from John. On his website, beyondthecanopy.com, and you can order personalized copies
for
your friends.
There might still be time.
There might still be time if you order today. Lightning round. Okay, just name the book and who it's for.
Dinosaurs in Space by Pranis T. And I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I don't know if anybody can help me out. It's Najukaitis.
Najukaitis.
This is for anyone who loves dinosaurs in space. It tells you that the dinosaurs did not die on the Earth and there are more adventures with dinosaurs. And it is for kids. Young kids, could be preschool through death. It's fantastic. And one more book that was one of my absolute favorites this year. El Defo.
El Defo.
Did
holy
I just steal
cow.
One of Brainerd's?
Let's both
talk. Well, everybody can talk
everybody
about
talk
El
about
Defo
El
because
Defo.
This was one of my absolute favorite books this year. She did
mine too.
A fantastic job of telling her story, her experiences with going to school, having
the phonic ear.
The phonic ear, yes. That gave her these special abilities to hear wherever the teacher went, she could hear what the teacher was saying, the teacher was doing.
She lost her hearing when she was really young. And so then the doctor gives her this thing called the phonic ear, which is like this big mechanical contraption she wears under her shirt, right? And then the teacher puts on a microphone, and then by the teacher talking normally, the microphone amplifies and broadcasts to her phonic ear, which she wears headphones, and then she can hear the teacher more clearly. But then she discovers that if the teacher didn't take off the microphone and she goes to the bathroom, I get to hear her going to the bathroom. You're in, third, fourth, fifth grade, and you tell your friends, I'm listening to our teacher go to the bathroom right now. You are a superhero, and she is a superhero in the story. But it's also about friendship, right, Raina? It's also about growing up.
No, this is my favorite book of the year. I mean, it's my favorite book of maybe the last 5 years. I think it's amazing. It's got a ton of buzz going. We're hoping that it's going to rack up some fun, exciting awards in 2015. And it deserves to. It's phenomenal.
It is. This is
a book for anybody and everybody.
She does a fantastic job of really... I don't know how she can remember that well what it was like to be a kid, because reading this book, it took me back to, wow, yeah, that is exactly how it felt to be in that grade and to be thinking that way and to be that obsessed with that thing.
We were talking about this last night. There's a scene where a kid offers her some Fritos, and then like in her head, she starts doing a pro and con list of whether she wants to be friends with that person. She's like, a pro, she gave me Fritos. Con, she's kind of pushy. But then she becomes friends with her because, after all, she did give her Fritos. But she also does, I mean, okay, so when we say this book is for anybody, something that I see a lot of comics, not a lot, but some comics publishers, and I'm not going to name names, they do books that have somewhat straightforward four-panel box on a page storytelling, because they're really trying to get people who don't read comics. And let's face it, when you get into like a Scott McCloudian kind of like bizarre simultaneous layout like he did with his Zot web comic, that can be confusing for some adults who haven't read comics in a long time. And I've seen it in my classrooms where adults will say to me, "Why is the artist doing this to me? I don't understand." So you'll see them do like this kind of pulled back, very grid style storytelling to appeal to the non-comics reader. But what Cece does in El Defo is she writes something that is so clear, yet so comics and so visually clever, but it's not playing a trick. It's not trying to show off. It's not trying to be like, "Oh, look at this amazing layout that I'm doing." She does things that comics does especially well, like the way she shows how it feels to be deaf when she's watching somebody talking and the word balloon is blank. Somebody will be saying something. She does like really cool ways to like represent how sound visually represent sound for somebody who's hard of hearing in this book, but she does it in a way that you just don't question. You don't even think twice about it. And I think it'll be eminently clear to anybody who's never even read a comic before. And that's another thing I get so excited about this book, because it introduces a wider audience to the great mechanics that comics has as a medium, right?
And doubly awesome because comics don't actually have sound. So
right.
It's a recreation of sound, or it's a representation of sound.
Yeah, here she is listening to her teacher go to the bathroom. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, no, CeCe's a hero in my mind with this book that she did. So, yes, and she was just on NPR. I was just listening to it the day. She was on the weekend, All Things Considered, and it was a great piece. We can link to that in the show notes as well. So, El Defo. Anything else that we need to say about that besides everybody should read it?
Everyone should read it.
Yeah, everybody
it's
should
great
read
for
it.
School teachers and in class. And there's a book called Wonder that's really popular that deals with bullying and relating to people. And this is definitely like the sort of a book on that sort of same level. Like every kid should have this in their school.
All right. Just a couple minutes left. Any other lightning rounds that we need?
Yes. First Second is publishing picture books now that are sort of like half picture book, half graphic novel. Ben Hackey did one called Julia's House for Lost Creatures. Anyone who likes Miyazaki, again, you're going to love this. It's awesome. But the one that was actually my personal favorite was called The Zoo Box. And it was by Ariel Cohn and Aaron Nels Steinke. This feels like a Maurice Sendak book. This is like one of the best picture books I've read in a long time. It's really surreal. It's creepy. It's funny. It's enchanting. It's about kids who dress up like animals and go to a zoo where humans are the animals in the zoo, and then get chased by the animals who think that the kids escaped from the zoo. It's really, really weird and great, and everything about it is wonderful, and I think kids will love it.
And I've got, for the opposite crowd, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by Roz Chast, a New Yorker cartoonist who's doing autobiography here to talk about her parents at the end of their lives and the stuff that you have to deal with when that goes down. And that's something that a lot of older people and younger people too can probably relate to. This is like a book for my dad, who's my grandmother passed away a few years ago. And so just kind of watching him go through that process was hard for me. It was hard for him. This is the book to say, you're not alone. This happens to every one of us, or it will happen to us soon. So highly recommended. I love Roz Chast.
I've been hearing a lot of positive buzz about that book too. I mean, she's been getting talked about.
It's also very funny. It's not all doom and gloom.
Like the positive buzz I hear is like, it's really good. Not like, it's good. Oh, it's so fun to talk about this. Right. Like, did we want, there was one that I wanted to, can we talk about that Kirby book?
Yes.
Because I want to also target the people who have a budding artist in their midst, you know, like the young person or even the teenager who's like, man, maybe I want to go into comics illustration. I'm so excited that more of these books are coming out that are reprinting original artwork by cartoonists. You know, like the four of us went to the Billy Ireland Cartoon Museum this past summer to look at the Bill Watterson exhibit. And part of what was fun for me was watching Dave and Raina go agog at whiteout on a page. Like the way you guys like, look at how many times he erased this and look how he fixed this. You know, it's cool to see these books coming out with untouched reproductions of original art where you can see all the white out and the erasers and the scribble marks and where they cut something out and paste it over top. And Abrams just put out The Art of the Simon and Kirby Studio by Joe Simon, Jack Kirby, edited by Mark Evanier. It's a great book for somebody who is into comics art in your life. There's a whole bunch of books like this coming out. IDW's got a whole series of these, like where they're reprinting art at original size. You can find these at most bookstores. I've been thinking about this at every bookstore. Yeah,
I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. It's Abrams for crying out loud. All right, last round. Anybody who wants to take it?
I'm gonna throw.
Can I put a convention to for a brand new comic, super brand new from Kaboom, called Capture Creatures, and it's by Frank and Becky, or Becky and Frank, Frank Gibson and Becky Drysdat, who have been web cartoonists for a long time. They've done amazing comics. And they have a new series that definitely plays to the Pokemon fans. Mm-hmm. I would say that this is like Pokemon meets Steven Universe. But you know, with an original twist too, but it's very fun. And it's got little creatures that are very much like Pokemon. So if you have a kid who's like, ah, I love Pokemon and that's all I love, I give them this book. And I think they'll probably like that too.
Awesome. Okay. And did you have one more?
I was going to throw in one of my other favorites from that I read this year. And Raina, sorry, but I love this book, Sisters. Everyone should read Sisters. We know everybody is already loving all of these books because they've been on the New York Times bestseller list for so long. But another just amazing job where you did a great job of getting the feel for what it was like to be in that age and wondering if your cousins are going to think you're cool, because I remember that feeling. And I just, you did it so perfectly. And it was just a beautiful book and wonderfully done. And everyone should read it.
And there's this love, and I already told you this privately, Raina, but there's this lovely poeticism of the headphones in the story where, you know, there's a lot of fighting between Raina and Amara. Amara or Amara?
It's Amara.
Amara. I apologize, Amara.
That's okay.
But like there's this tension with these darned headphones, and there's just this moment where the book doesn't have like this big, like, you know, I thought about that summer and this is what I learned after all. No Wonder Years moment. It ends very quietly and lets you kind of draw your own conclusions. But there's this wonderful moment of closure where Raina takes the headphones off, and it's just a simple panel, but it's so powerful in taking off those headphones. It's so good. So yeah, Sisters, if you haven't read it yet, or if you haven't heard of it, for crying out loud, go get it. 7 more books and Raina will have taken over the New York Times bestseller list.
Aww.
Deservedly so. So yeah. All right. Gosh, guys. What, Dave? What are you doing?
Oh, I don't know what.
Oh, okay. I thought you were reaching for something.
Oh, because we have a ton of books that we didn't.
I know.
Yeah, we've got piles here, too.
Hold them up to the camera. Oh, the Warren Commission report.
Yeah.
For the crazy conspiracy theorist nut in your life.
Yes, that's who we wrote it for.
By Jersey Jones and
Dan Mishkin
and Ernie Colon. We've got Star Wars Ewoks for the person in your life who doesn't. He's not ashamed to admit that the Ewoks are awesome.
Basically, buy this book for Dave.
Zach Giolongo did an amazing job tying tons of Star Wars continuity together. And just real quick, The Shadow Hero. This was another one of the best books of the year for me. Definitely one of the best superhero comics. Again, focusing on diversity in comics, but also just a really great story. Just one of the best superhero stories I've read in a long time. It reminded me why I love superheroes in the first place, and it's just sort of like a love letter to superhero comics.
Gene Yang.
Just really well written and well drawn.
Is Gene Yang ever going to drop the ball? No, he is not. No.
And Sonny Liu, amazing. Who knew? I had no idea that Sonny Liu would draw such an amazing superhero comic. I was a huge fan of his from other books like Wonderland and Malinky Robot, but holy cow, he did a fan-freaking-tastic job.
And there's lots of lists. Like, the Scholastic has a list of best comics of the year, and there are other places you go. Just look for best comics. NPR has a great list of best comics of the year, so you can check those out as well. But that was our list, as best as we could do in the hour and change that we had. Raina and Dave, thank you guys so much for closing out another year of Comics Are Great with me.
Yay.
Thanks for having us. We love it.
And one more time, today is the last day to get signed books by Raina from the Astoria Bookshop. And Eric got the link in the chat for us. Thank you, Eric. And that was, one more time, where is it? AstoriaBookshop.com. Is that right? Oh, my God.
Raina. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's AstoriaBookshop.com/Raina. And then also Astronaut Academy t-shirts. Is today the last day for that, too?
Think so.
Smile t-shirts and Astronaut Academy t-shirts and Teen Boat t-shirts.
And you can get all that on the Comics Bakery website, comicsbakery.com.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks so much, guys. And we got an event coming up in January. Do we have a date on that?
January 27th. It's Tuesday. And it's the Webcomics Lab from 7 to 8:30 p.m.
And Mallet's Creek.
At the Mallet's Creek branch. And
do we want to drop who the guest is? You want to do an exclusive?
We can do an exclusive drop of the special guest, Brad Geiger.
Brad Geiger of webcomics.com and the Webcomics Weekly podcast.
Yeah, we will be Skyping him in. So bring your questions, any how to create webcomics questions.
That's a great resource to have at the lab. So that's January
27th.
All right. So, hey, happy holidays, guys. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
I was wondering if you're going to do your Bing Crosby.
Crosby said, no.
Can you do a Minute Maid commercial for us, Dave? Yeah, you did 70s Minute Maid commercials.
You can use Minute Maid in your holiday baking.
With your Kraft cheese.
And add it to your apple pie.
With Kraft cheese spread.
Yeah. Adding Kraft cheese will perfect any recipe.
All right. Well, this episode will be archived at comicsgreat.com/CAG108. If you enjoyed this discussion, if you've been enjoying the show this year, a great present you could give to me is to give the show a star rating on on iTunes, however many stars you think it deserves. Or if you're watching it on YouTube, giving it a thumbs up helps more people find the show. Thank you to Dave and Rain of comicsbakery.com. Thanks to Androst Ethelfred on Twitter, if people want to follow you. Yeah,
sure.
Cartoonists, if cartoonists want to harangue you about, hey, buy my book, they should follow you on Twitter at Ethelfred, right?
Go ahead. I'll check out your site.
And thanks to
Your selector.
Know your selector. And thanks to Matt Dubay and Eric Closer in the control room for stitching this thing together week after week after week. Thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for letting me do this show on Wednesdays at in their studio here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of ComicsAreGreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.